visitation hopefully this year, and I'm hoping to talk to you a little bit about style today. And what I really want to focus on is really a simple concept that I want to get through to you. It's only if you leave here remembering one thing, it's just try to transform your sentences from being noun-heavy into being centered around a strong verb. Okay, so if you sit here for 15 minutes, remember nothing else, everything else just goes off the back of your head, that's fine as long as you remember that when you write your sentences, when you review your sentences, keep an eye on how many nouns you're using, because right, if you use too many nouns, it'll make your sentences heavy. Okay? And try to use strong, finite verbs. Okay? Bridget, what one thing do you remember from today's talk? Yeah, or to make sure that your sentences have strong essential verbs, right? Yeah. So you might end up with quite a few nouns, but if you can transform those nouns into verbs, that's what you want to try and do. Okay.
Why is it that readers like to see? And I'm talking about readers in general.
Right.
Basically, people read your work. Why is it that they like strong verbs more than nouns?
People generally like strong verbs because strong verbs tend to communicate meaning more quickly and more accurately, and it's easier to sense what you're actually saying with the strong verb. Instead of having just a pile of nouns that you don't know how the nouns are related to each other. So that's, I think, the simple answer to it. I hope that helps. So that's the general idea for today, okay? Transform your sentences from piled up with nouns into centered on strong verbs, okay? But to get you to that point, you have to be able to recognize the nouns in your sentence. Okay? And sometimes you don't recognize the nouns because you have verbals in your sentence, right? And you might not know what a verbal is, okay? So the first thing I want to do, I want to make sure that you can recognize different types of verbals and how those verbals are functioning in your sentences. Okay, because verbals look like verbs, but they're not acting like verbs in your sentences. Okay, so here I have finite verb. You want to be able to find a finite verb in your sentence. Okay? And you want that verb, a couple of things. One, you don't want it to be just a to-be verb at all times, right? Sometimes you want to have a to-be verb as a finite verb in your sentence. That's perfectly fine. But if every sentence you write just has a to-be verb as a finite verb, then you're in trouble. Now, what do I mean by a finite verb? Catherine, any idea what I mean by that?
That it's fixed or limited.
Right, it's fixed and limited, right? What does that mean for it to be fixed and limited?
That has the same form, person, number, and tense.
Alright, yeah, so can you give me an example of a finite verb? You can use a sentence if you like.
Okay, he saw.
He saw. Okay, what's the subject of that sentence?
He.
Okay, and what's the verb?
Saw.
Okay, and what's the person of the verb?
It's
third person, right? Yes, it's third person. What's the number? Singular or plural?
Singular.
Okay, and what's the tense?
Passive.
Okay, passive. Good. Is that verb in the passive voice or the active voice?
Passive.
No, it's actually active. How do I know it's active and not passive? Any ideas on that? How you know it's active and not passive? Okay, good. The subject does the action, right? That's simple enough, right? If the subject is doing the action of the verb, then you have an active verb, okay? So I want to clarify a little bit what I said at the beginning. Try to find finite verbs in your sentences, and whenever possible, if it works with what you're trying to do in your sentence, if it works with your rhetorical situation, right? Try to keep that verb in the active voice, okay? What's the sound that you have a verb in a passive voice?
Almost like a verb is a noun?
Not exactly. Exactly. No. But thank you for trying. Yeah, Francis.
The object or direct object. The subject is being acted upon.
Good.
And sometimes the direct object or indirect object is doing the action.
Okay. Could you give me an example of a sentence in the passive voice?
I was receiving harsh treatment from my literature professor.
Okay. I was receiving.
Or I received.
No, you were right the first time for the passive voice. I was receiving what kind of treatment?
Harsh.
Harsh treatment? Well, we can talk about this later, Miss Neva. Or maybe with the doctor.
She's great, but sometimes you receive
harsh treatment from her.
I'm just picking on my literary.
Okay, good. So here you have this to be verb, right? This helping verb attached to the receiving, right? So that you, right, the recipient, the object, you're acting like the subject of the sentence, right? So you have this preposition of phrase from my teacher, right? And that also signals that you have the actor is not the one that's clearly acting here, right? It's kind of an aside. Versus I was receiving harsh treatment from my teacher. Am I imagining things here? This is passive voice, right? It's active. This is actually active. I'm sorry. I knew that was a bad sentence. let me go back to our simple sentence here.
But it expresses, it's an active verb expressing a passive action.
Right, yeah. So
that's very tricky, Francis. That's very tricky.
Yeah.
How about...
I was receiving a harsh treatment from Preston.
Harsh treatment was received by me.
Right, there we go, yeah. That's better. The harsh treatment was received by me. So that I'm receiving the action, right? Or I was seen by her, right? If you go back to Catherine's initial sentence, right? The way she said it, she saw me. Okay? So the subject is the one doing the action, right? It's very, very clear. Here, the subject is receiving the action, okay? So forget the whole thing about receiving harsh treatment. I apologize for that. Think in terms of it's the subject receiving the action, right? I was seen by her. And then who does it? It's usually in the form of like, either it's not there, you don't know who does it, or there's a preposition or phrase that gives you kind of an aside, right? That it was done by somebody else, okay? So we have a sense that you have a passive a verb. Your finite verb is in the passive tense, passive voice. Then you want to think, okay, how can I put this verb into the active voice, right? You want to make sure that you actually have a finite verb in your sentence, right? And you check that by figuring out, well, what's the person of my finite verb? What's the number? What's the tense? Okay. So what we often have is we don't have finite verbs, or the finite verb we use is just a to-be verb, right? It's kind of a... which can be a very strong verb if you want to give a definition for something, right? And your definitions are often very powerful parts of your papers. But if you have a to-be verb in every sentence in your paper, your reader will not be able to locate where those great definitions are. Okay, so you have to be careful about where you have those to-be verbs, right? And so then you look at your verbal. Sometimes you have a weak to-be verb and then a bunch of verbals piled on top of each other. Okay? And verbals, they look like verbs, just like the word, right? The verb here, go, it's a verb, right? But it's not functioning as a verb in your sentence. Okay? It could be a gerund, a participle, or an infinitive. They're all different kinds of verbals. They're words that look like verbs but function as some other part of speech. And I'm going to give you some examples of these, okay? The gerund ends in an ing, and it functions as a noun. Eating cake is my favorite hobby. Okay? Eating there, eating cake, that's functioning as a noun in the sentence. Participle. Again, you have an ing ending, so this is where it gets tricky to distinguish the participles from the gerunds. Okay, this is not easy to distinguish. You have to figure out how is that verbal working in the sentence. Okay? And it can end with an ing, or an ed, or an en. Okay? And there are some other examples as well, but that's a general clue that you might want to consider whether or not this is a finite verb, or if this is actually just a participle, a verb. Okay. And an infinitive, and you all recognize an infinitive because at the side and the margins of your papers, your Litrev 1 papers, if you have a harsh professor, they'll put on the side something like this, right? Split infinitive. Okay. Which is when you take that infinitive, right, which is the infinite form of the verb, it's not finite yet. You haven't distinguished the person or the number or the tense of the verb, right? To give that to help tell us who or what or when or who or what does what he or she does. Okay. And you split it by throwing something in between the two and the verb, right? To quickly make. Okay. You don't want to do that. Your Litrev professor will just write things in your margin, okay? So don't split your infinitives, but do recognize when you use an infinitive, right? If you have a verb that begins with a to, it's a verbal. And it can function as a noun, an adjective, or an adverb, okay? So I want you to just take a look. I gave you a handout. It's the second, should be the second sheet you have. It's stapled together. I just want to go through a couple examples to make sure you can recognize these different types of verbals. Okay? So we're just going to do number 1, number 3, number 5, 7, and 10. So if you go ahead and try to recognize the infinitive, the gerund, or the participle, or whatever the question asks you to do. Okay? Any ideas on number 1?
C.
C? Okay, how do you know?
Because it has 2 in front of it.
Okay, good. So the first sign, right, you have an infinitive there, you have 2 in front of the verb, right, to take any Saturday job. Okay? Any questions about that as an infinitive? I'm just trying to locate the infinitives here to make sure we can do that. Okay? How about 3? The participle. Anybody know which one's the participle?
C.
Okay, C. How do you know that waddling toward us is the C?
Because of the ing.
Okay, how do you know that's not How do you know that's a participle and not a gerund? Because they both have that ing there. Okay, what is it modifying? Okay, good. All right, good. So you have an adjective there, the participle, again with the ing, but you have to figure out how it's working in the sentence. Okay, thank you. How about five?
B.
B, okay, floating on the raft. And how is that working in the sentence?
It says the ing, and it says we're
floating. Okay, and how do you know that's a gerund and not a participle?
Because it functions as a noun, not an adjective.
Okay, good. And how is it functioning in the sentence? Okay, good. Yeah. All right. Good. So we actually can see both that it's a gerund and that it's functioning in the sentence as a direct object. Okay? So we see that floating on the raft, that's not a verb, right? It's a verbal. It's acting as a noun, functioning as a noun. How about number seven?
Yeah?
C. Okay, it's an adjective. And what is it modifying? Encouraged by all of us. What does that modify? Okay, good. Yeah, so encouraged by all of us is modifying Sandy. And how do you know that that's an adjective? Or if it's an adjective, what kind of verbal is it?
I would say present participle. Wait.
Yeah, you're right. It's a participle. Yeah, it's a participle. Yep, because it's a verbal that's acting or functioning as an adjective. Okay, and how about number 10?
B.
B, a gerund phrase. Cheating never gets you anywhere. How do you know that that's a gerund? Okay, good. And how is that noun functioning in the sentence?
Subject, verb, object.
It's an object? Anybody disagree?
It's a subject.
Subject, yeah, good, yeah. So cheating is actually the subject of that sentence. Okay, good. All right. Any? I know I went through that all very quickly. I apologize, but I just want to make sure that we can recognize these, especially the gerunds and when the infinitives act like nouns, because it's going to play a part in trying to denominalize our prose. Okay, but are there any questions on that? I did give you more examples that you can actually, there's actually two pages of examples here that I stole from a website that I gave you online, and you can check your answers online to make sure this is clear, okay? Because I know I went over it quickly, and it's actually not a very easy concept to get. It's kind of advanced stuff. Right. So, but what I want to do now is I want to show you that it can be helpful as you look at your own sentences. And so what I want to do now is I want to just review this sheet here that says denominalize or avoiding nominalization. So avoiding nominalization. What do you think that means, nominalization?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, nouns. Yeah, avoiding too many nouns, right? Avoiding making these sentences too heavy, right? Or nouns that make your sentences kind of sink into the ground and never to be understood, right? So some clues for finding the nominalization, right? So first clue, if you have verbals, right? Gerunds and infinitives acting as nouns especially, right? That those two are a clue that you might have some nominalization in your sentence that you need to fix, okay? Another clue is the use of to-be verbs, right? So I talked about that. If you're using a to-be verb as in your sentence, you better have a good reason that that's the verb you're using, right? Otherwise, you might think, you know what, there's maybe a stronger verb I could use here, or a more appropriate verb, right? Because like I said, to-be is actually a very strong verb. When we say one thing is another, that's a big deal, right? That's a metaphor. That's a big deal. So make sure you don't abuse that, okay? Use it when it's appropriate. Okay, and the use of passive voice, which forgive me for confusing you on that, but I hope you understand it now that if she was seen by him, that verb was seen as in the passive voice. Okay, if you see that, you have there's a very good chance that your sentence is full of these nominalizations, too many nouns. And if you're missing an agent, you don't know who does what. You don't know who is doing the acting. Right? Or if the person doing the acting is followed by this a preposition, right? By somebody. Okay, then you can find a way to actually cut out some of your words and have a more concise sentence. Okay. So what I've done is there's the advice for what to look for, and what I've done is I've given you just on the last sheet you have a random selection of sentences from a second semester freshman, and this really is just kind of a random selection that I took from some papers last semester. And now this is on the Divine Comedy in Paradise Lost. You're not there yet, but maybe this will be something to look forward to for next semester, okay? And what I want to do is I want each of you to take five minutes and just take the first, well, as many as you can do. Take as many of these sentences as you can take and do your best to transform them from sentences full of these nouns and transform them into denominalized sentences, right? Where there's some strong verb, some appropriate verb that helps you make the sentence more concise. Okay, just take a few minutes. Thank you. take one more minute. Okay, any ideas for that first one? Yeah.
You could say you debated the budget cuts for the Writing Center.
Oh, okay, all right, so yeah, that's I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. So that's you're looking at the exercises that are attached to the handout I gave you. We're gonna go to that a little bit later, but I wanna do some more. UD appropriate sentences right now. So yeah, it's the very last sheet you have with all the students. I apologize for that. Anybody else do the although it may be argued? Yeah.
By comparison, no misconception of commands or feeling is much like the purgatory non-based media, although it may be argued that no one does not talk about purgatory.
All right, good. Give us that one more time.
By comparison, Milton's conception of man's earthly life is much like the purgatory in Dante's Commedia, although it may be argued that Milton does not talk about purgatory.
All right, good. Notice how she still has a complex sentence there, right? She still has the two different clauses. So she hasn't ignored that you do want to have some sentence variation. I'm not encouraging you to give your professors whole paragraphs of simple sentences, right? Ms. Niebuhr talked about that in the past, so that's not going to help your reader at all. You still want to be able to use compound sentences and complex sentences, right? So maintaining that subordinate conjunction is actually very helpful to maintain the complexity of the sentence. But you don't need to have all of these nouns pile up to maintain that complexity, right? Will you read that sentence one more time?
By comparison, Milton's conception of man's earthly life is much like the purgatory in Dante's Commedia, although it may be argued that Milton does not talk about purgatory.
Okay. All right. Good. Now, what did you do exactly? Are there any? If we're looking at just kind of the step by step, did you transform any verbs into any nouns into verbs?
You did
by comparison, so that's still a noun. But you did transform the verbal there, right? You did take that comparing both epics, right? So you did that. Anybody else have an example of what they did? Yeah.
Okay, so I had, although one may argue that Milton doesn't talk about purgatory.
Stop there. That's
yeah.
Okay. Why did you do that? What did you do? One may argue instead of it may be argued.
Well, one may argue is active, although okay. You don't have a very strong subject, I guess.
Okay.
It's not in the passive tense.
All right, good. Yeah, so at least you've gone from the passive voice into the active voice, right? And, mm-hmm. and you have a good question to ask yourself, do I want to use one or can I think of a better subject? But you're exactly right. At least you have a sense that there is a subject, right? Okay, good. I'm sorry. Continue.
And then, let's see. A comparison of both epic poems reveals that Milton's conception of man's earthly life is much like the Purgatory in Dante's Commedia.
Ah, good. What did you do there?
I switched comparing into comparison, so just made that a noun.
Okay.
And then, rather than it is revealed, I put comparison as a subject, so this comparison reveals.
Good, yeah, so the comparison reveal. So you see, and you get rid of that to be verb that's not really doing anything for you in this particular sentence, right? But you're taking what should be the central verb there and making it active. right? The comparison reveals. So what is it that reveals? It's the comparison that reveals. Does everybody see how we did that? Does that make sense? And you both did a wonderful job. I just wanted to make sure, give some more options, right? Okay, let's just take another 30 seconds. Oh, yeah, please.
Can I push it further?
Yeah, please.
What's the action? Who are the agents in that first sentence?
Yeah, good.
Yeah. What's the most important action that's going on?
Yeah, I think I'm going to say too. Milton imagines earthly life much as Dante does purgatory.
Very good. Oh, well, just get a quiz. Yeah, so what's the answer to Dr. Roman Baldwin's question? Who's the actor?
The poet, Milton and Dante.
Yeah, so your question about one can sense, actually, how you can do even better, I say, well, Milton, right? Give it to us one more time, Miss Lieber.
Sure. Milton imagines earthly life much as Dante does purgatory.
That's good. That might also actually be leaving out. There might be two actions going on, right? There's the action of the poets, and then there's also the action of the readers. And we want to decide which one is more important. So what if, I'm throwing out my rewrite, it sounds like these are from student papers, so we want to ask the student. Even though we notice that Milton doesn't talk about purgatory, if we compare the two poems, we find that Milton and Dante actually agree about how men should live life on this earth.
Right.
Now, that's actually longer. The problem here is that concision is not really the end point. Sometimes when you denominalize, you make it longer. On the other hand, does it also make it clearer? It's kind of paradoxical.
Right.
I'm sorry.
The clarity, actually, that's actually a very, very helpful, because it is the clarity that you're after more than anything else, right? And so the idea is that, yes, sometimes you will end up with being able to have a more concise sentence, but what really matters is that you can even be more clear.
Well, there isn't anything more concise than a nominalization, right?
Right.
The problem is like there are 10 of them together. Because the nominalization has a whole sentence in it, right? It's like, whoa, who's doing anything? What level? What are we talking about? And so anyhow, this is a wonderful. I'm sorry to jump in.
I thought,
let's keep going even further here. Let's break it down and find out just what action is. I had a stake in this because I've been reading papers for the last 4 days. My eyes are all circling. And the ones where the writer's actually saying, here's what I think, here's what the reader thinks, here's what the writer thinks, here's what Dante thinks, here's what the character thinks. Those are all different levels of action. So if you can go through the theater, what level am I working on right now? Am I talking about Dante, the character, Dante, the narrator, or the reader? Sometimes it's
right, exactly. So all that just brings forth more and more clarity, right? And so you answer the reader's questions for the reader by making it clear who's doing the action, right? And whether it be Dante the character, Dante the poet, the reader, Milton, the pilgrim, Dante the pilgrim, whatever it might be. Folks, and that goes back to your very first question, Francis, as to why use the verbs, right? Why use the verbs? So you know not just what the action is, but who is doing the action, right? Good. Let's take a look at the second example on that same sheet. Anybody have any examples?
I didn't change the first clause.
Okay.
But I did say the poets consistently address love, or address the idea of love.
Okay, good. So you took that after the comma there, so you transformed it to the poets consistently address love, right? Good. And so what did you do? Could you walk me through what your thought process was?
Well, there's a to be verb. Love is an idea. So got rid of that, and also is consistently addressed is a passive
And so, and there's like not really a definitive subject. Mm-hmm. So by putting in a subject such as the poets, it gives you the more.
Good. Then you get to exactly what Dr. Roman Baldwin was saying, right, about clarifying who is this that's doing the action, right? Good. Yeah, and again, like I said, I'm not saying that is a worthless verb, right? Love is patient, love is kind, right? That's a pretty strong statement, but you give it a definition there, right? Love is an idea that is consistently just, that's not a definition of love, right? That you're weakening the use of to be, which is a big deal if you're a philosopher, I imagine, right? So be careful how you use that verb. Any other thoughts on how to do that sentence? Or rewrite? Yeah, please.
You could also put consistently in the front, consistently both poets express love.
Okay, good. So you can actually, so you would actually combine what comes before the comma and what comes after, and just make it a one clause without interruption. Okay, so give me the full clause one more time.
Consistently, both Dante and Milton address love in their poems.
Okay, good, good. Or both Dante and Milton consistently address love in the poems. Either way, right? Mm-hmm. Good. So you can actually find ways to take out those long prepositional phrase, right, and actually replace it. And make a more concise and clearer version of the sentence. Okay? Good. Let's take another one. Dante's views. Mackenzie, any ideas?
The first sentence I have, Dante supplies his views throughout the Divine Comedy.
Okay.
And the other one, I don't know about this one.
What are the problems, what are the difficulties with that? Maybe I'll do it that way. What are the difficulties with the second one?
Such as, and then must be.
Okay, so you see this such as a problem, and you see that the must be overcome, right? Why is that a problem? The must be overcome.
I feel like it should be in there because it aids.
Okay, it doesn't help anything. Okay, well, yeah. So on the one hand, it's in what voice, active or passive?
Must be active.
Why do you think it's active?
Oh, overcome. So that's passive.
Yeah, so it must be overcome, right? So you have that to be verb, the helping verb with the overcome. So you, oh, we don't. Who's doing the overcoming? Let me ask you that. Who was overcoming?
Dante.
Is Dante overcoming, or is he being overcome? Or is he supposed to be overcoming?
Oh yeah, he's supposed to overcome the figures, right?
Okay, yeah. So we don't. So it's not clear. Who is overcoming what, right? And so we need to clarify that. Okay, so how can we clarify that?
Could you say the love or daunting the pilgrim's love for figures must be overcome?
Well, that's saying the same thing. How about this? What must Dante overcome?
His love for figures such as Virgil and other great poets.
Okay, good. And who must do the overcoming?
Dante.
Okay, good. So give me the sentence again with Dante.
Dante must overcome his love for figures such as Virgil.
Okay, good. Do you see what you did there?
Yeah.
What did you do?
I specified who must do the overcoming.
Okay.
And then put it in a better order of what shall be overcome.
Good, so part of it is actually changing the syntax of your sentence, right? Changing the order of the sentence, right? And part of it is clarifying who's doing what and what is he doing, he or she doing, right? Miss Niwa, did you have did I see another one over here? Catherine, did I see you? No? Okay. Any questions, comments, concerns, or suggestions for that sentence? Okay, I'll leave it at that, but I would encourage you to continue this exercise both with this example, because you want to do it with examples of UD writing, because y'all are UD students and y'all want to have something worthwhile to think about as you're writing your sentences, right? You also have these examples I gave you along with non-annotation handout. And these examples are also helpful, partly because we have the answers for you here that I'm going to pass out, okay? Or at least suggestions for answers, okay? But also just because more practice is going to help you recognize these problems in your own writing, okay? So here's my advice. I have one more thing to share with you before we go, but here's my advice to make sure you actually don't just waste this 50 minutes of your life, okay? After you write your next essay, go back through it from the very last sentence of the essay, like one sentence at a time, and try to figure out, okay, what is really the focal point of this sentence? Is it a verb? Is it a noun? Do I have just a pile of nouns? I don't know who's doing the action. Do I have passive voice? Do I have active voice in my verbs? Do I have a to-be verb as a central finite verb in my sentence? Or do I actually have a verb that tells me something that's appropriate to what the sentence is actually saying? Okay, so actually take one sentence at a time as a kindness to your readers who don't want to have their eyes going crazy as they read your papers. And try to make your sentences as clear, if not as concise, again, focus on clear, as possible by making it very clear who's doing the action and what that action is that he or she is doing. Okay. Now there's one more just small thing I want to go over with you very quickly, and that is I walked through with you these different kinds of verbals, right? And there was one reason for that was because I wanted you to recognize that some verbals can act as and function as nouns, and that those are some of the kinds of nouns that can weigh down your sentence, right? But I also wanted you to recognize dangling verbals. Okay? So those are verbals. Dangling verbals are verbals that are unattached to a non-verb pronoun. You don't know how the verbal is working, the verbal phrase is working, right? Or the verbal is attached to the wrong noun or pronoun. Okay? So I've given you some examples here. Okay? So again, I'm sorry for all the paper, and I'm sorry for not being clear enough about which paper we're using, but if you go to the very first paper we had that had all the definitions on it, right, lots of to-be verbs on that paper, finite verb, phrase, etc. Okay, so it has all the, and this is just a summation of your verbal English handbook. Okay, I just went through that and kind of took out the goodies from there. So you have a nice handbook for helping with these things, okay? So just make sure you use it, especially when your professors say, hey, check out section 26 of the LEH. Go do that. You'll be happier for it, okay? So I want you to look at the examples of dangling verbals, okay? So here we have studying engine tune-up equipment in detail. Theory and practice are combined in the course on suspension systems. We have a verbal phrase here. What's the verbal phrase?
Study an engine, tune up equipment in detail.
Yep, exactly. Study an engine, tune up equipment in detail. What is that phrase doing in that sentence?
It's saying we study.
Okay, and how is it connected to the rest of the sentence?
That it's part of.
Okay, so it's part of the course. Study an engine tune-up equipment in detail, that's describing the course.
That was combined with.
I'll help you out. It's not clear, right? We don't know. So there's a reason here, because it doesn't. It's dangling, right? It's a verbal. We don't know what it's attached to, right? We're trying to figure it out, and it is. It's guessing. Right. Oh, what is this actually doing in the sentence, right? So when you have a dangling modifier like that, when you have this phrase that you're not quite sure how it's working, there's a couple ways to fix it. Right? So I'll give you three ways. Alright? Do you all have this paper? Okay. The first one is you can change the independent clause. What's the independent clause? Okay, and what is that? Just go ahead and read it for me. Independent clause in the sentence.
Theory and practice are combined in the course of the sentence.
Okay, good. So we can, so thank you very much. So we can change that independent clause, right, to include a word that the phrase can logically modify. Okay. So here's an example. Study an engine tune-up and equipment in detail. Students learn a combination of theory and practice. So what's changed about that, the independent clause? What do you think happened? Good, yeah. So now it doesn't begin with theory and practice anymore, it begins with students learn, right? So the question I asked Jan earlier, what is that phrase doing? We didn't know. Now we know it's modifying the students, right? Studying engine tune-up equipment in detail. The students are the ones doing the studying, right? So now all we did was we had to put our noun that's being described by the ding, by the verbal, close to the verbal. Okay, so when you have a verbal phrase, you want to make sure that whatever that verbal phrase is modifying is close, syntactically close to what it is modifying. Does that make sense, Luke?
Yeah.
What do you want to do when you have, where do you want to place?
Just close to it.
All right, good. All right, so good. You want to place that phrase as close to that which it modifies, right? All right, here's another option. I'll cover this over quickly. You can eliminate the verbal. Get rid of the verbal. Get rid of the studying, engine tune-up equipment in detail. Get rid of it altogether. Instead, create a prepositional phrase to modify the subject. Along with engine tune-up equipment, theory and practice are combined in the course on suspension systems. Right, so there's the other thing that's included in the course. Okay? And third, you can just eliminate the verbal phrase completely. Students study engine tune-up equipment as part of a combination of theory and practice in the course of suspension systems. Okay? So dangling verbals, these are often another one of the problems with clarity in your sentences, right? So you want to try and identify those and use one of these little tricks to fix them up. Okay? So thank you very much for coming. Please.